You've got the drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're talking to everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and work-at-home mom who would love to devote more time to creative writing and journaling.
And I'm Abigail Krebs, the writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm living my creative life nights and weekends after I get home from my full-time job at an ad agency.
And you're listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast.
We are interviewing Callie Fion today. Callie is a middle school English teacher living in the Washington, D.C. suburbs. She and her husband, Jesse, have two daughters named Hadley and Harper, and they are both named after To Kill a Mockingbird, though Hadley's name is a compromise because Jesse thought naming Hadley Radley was taking it a little too far. I think Callie would disagree. Callie has a BA in education from Calvin College and an MFA in creative writing from Seattle Pacific University. She writes on a regular basis for Relief Journal, Coffee and Crumbs, and Makes You Mom. And her writing has also been featured on The Image blog, Good Letters, Art House America, Tweet Speak Poetry, and Alter Work. She was also a cast member in the 2014 Listen to Your Mother DC show. Callie tweets at Callie Fion. She's also on Instagram at Callie Fion and Facebook. And you can find more of her writing on CallieFion.com. So welcome to the show, Callie. How are you doing tonight?
Thank you. I'm doing well. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So we always kind of do the open-ended question at the beginning. Tell us a little about your life so far and how you got to where you are and ended up on this crazy podcast.
Okay. So I was teaching full-time before I had kids, and I was a full-time middle school teacher, and I loved it. What I didn't like was working full-time, and I knew that once I started to have kids, I didn't want to do that. And I just assumed that probably I wouldn't teach at all because there was something about it that just absolutely consumed me. And I think I was just afraid that if I went back to teaching, because I knew what it took to do what I wanted to do in the classroom, it would just take time away from the children that I wanted to have. So I kind of put that on the shelf for a long time. Actually, I didn't put it on the shelf. I threw away everything. I threw away all my lesson plans, all my textbooks, all, you know, everything. And I was just going to be a mom, and that's what I was going to do. So that was a pause. I've always written. Before I actually seriously was writing, I'd been published in a couple of places here and there. I'd given a couple of keynote places for those schools that I... you know, like the corporations, I don't know exactly what you call them, the districts and things like that. And so that was always really fun. Writing has always been a part of who I was. I don't think I really admitted it. It was more like a hobby. I think what I loved about writing, even as a little girl, was I liked to be able to go back and look at something again and again and again. So if it meant like something really strange, like walking down my block after school and seeing how things changed from the morning to the afternoon, or like even from year to year, there's something intriguing about going back to the same event or the same setting again and again and again. Of course, I didn't know that that was creative nonfiction at the time, but that was something that's always just been sort of a balm for me, is to revisit something. And actually, my friend who I walked to school with, who's actually one of the editors at Red Book Magazine now in New York City, her name's Sarah Smith, I remember her telling me one time, Callie, that story gets better every time you tell it. And she was sort of jabbing, you know, she was sort of, you know, making fun of me. And I looked at her and I said, it does. And I remember thinking, like, that's exactly what I love to do. And this was just like second or third grade. So blogging, after I had kids, I started blogging when Hadley was about 7 or 8 months old. And that just seemed like a really natural step. I've always kept journals, and it was just an excuse for me to show the grandparents pictures of her. But really what I was doing was coming up with a story. So my very first blog entries are probably awful, but I can look back at them and remember what a relief it was to just set some of, like, put a pin in some of what fluttered around my life. And I could sort of like grab onto a memory and put it down in words. And that was, you know, not worrying about publishing, not worrying about whether or not, I was getting comments or anything like that. It was strictly because I wanted to craft a memory and catch it in some way. So this is a really long answer, and I apologize, but this is kind of how I got to be where I am today. So after blogging, I decided I wanted to take it a little bit more seriously, and I started taking online courses. And that's when my first instructor, Lindsay Crittenden, she told me about creative nonfiction, and she's the one who introduced it to me. So I took a very, 6 months, I think, intensive course on creative nonfiction, and basically never looked back after that. After that, I wanted more. I started reading everything I could find about creative nonfiction, and then I went to grad school. I applied to grad school. So right towards the end of grad school, you know, I wanted to write, and I still want to write, but I know that I can't do it all day, and I also know that I just love to teach. So I basically DIY'd my own career, and I went into the school that I taught before I had kids, and I said, I'll teach part-time. I'd love to teach part-time. I don't want lunch duty. I don't want recess. I don't want, you know, any of that, which sounds, I guess, kind of selfish, but I think it's a way that I'm sort of being able to hold on to my creativity so that I can write, and then I can give all of myself to my writing, and then to the classroom, and then to my own children. And so no extras. I go in, and I know I'm not getting paid as much as I could, but I don't want to do any of that other stuff because it just wears me out. So my life is divided into, I write in the mornings, and then I go in and I teach in the afternoons. And then I'm a mother throughout all that, but I'm finding that both of those, all three of those things sort of feed off of each other, and it works really well. I would have never imagined that I would have gone back to teaching, but I'm glad that I'm doing it. I'm glad I get to write and teach. So that's a little bit of a synopsis.
Yeah, that sounds like it worked out really well for you to be able to sort of cobble together what your days look like now, where you're still teaching, which is something that you love, but you still have time for those creative writing pursuits. And obviously, you know, you're still taking care of your kids throughout all that. So your kids are a little bit older now, if I'm thinking right, they're in grade school, like grade school age, right?
Yes. First and third grade.
Okay. So did your days ever look different before they were in school, when they were in like the toddler preschool age range?
Yes. So in the beginning, actually, yeah, in the beginning when I decided this is not just a hobby, I really want to take this seriously. I took a little course down in Bethesda, Maryland at a writer's center. And it was basically, I think the title of the course was Moms Write Motherhood or something like that, which was perfect. But it was on Tuesdays from 9 until 11 in the morning. And that's not going to work out so well for me. So my husband said, we're going to get a babysitter. We need to hire a babysitter. And I felt horrible about that. I just thought, no, we can't. We can't do this. This is the extras. This is something that I should do at night. We shouldn't do this. But, you know, God bless him, he insisted. And, of course, he said, well, then we can go on date nights, too. Like, used to a babysitter, we can go out. And I thought that sounded great, too. But So my days started, I had a Wednesday, I don't know, one morning, it was like Tuesday or Wednesday morning, our babysitter would come over for 3 hours, and I left, and that was my writing time. And then that was a year before my oldest, Hadley, started preschool. And then we decided to keep our babysitter on, and she would come on Tuesday and Thursday afternoons from 2 until 5. And those were the days when I was writing. So I had 6 hours a week to write. And I was basically doing writing assignments. I would get any textbook I could find or if I was taking a class at the time, you know, any kind of writing down the bones, Anne Lamott, or anything with like any kind of prompt, and I would go to a coffee shop and I would just write for 3 hours. And so a lot of that was blogging, you know, would turn into a blog entry or something like that, unless I was taking a class. But yeah, the when they were young, we hired a babysitter. So that that was much different than what it looks like now.
I think that's really fantastic for a lot of people to hear, because I was asking for purely selfish reasons, because my daughter, who's also named Hadley, is she's almost 18 months old right now.
Okay.
So I'm kind of in that in between where it's like, I don't really have time for this, but you feel bad about hiring a sitter or something
right.
like that when you don't really need one. So it's really good to hear from somebody who's done that and made it work and thinks it was all worth it. It's encouraging for us.
Absolutely. Oh yeah. It, yeah. So Harper would have been just turned one when we hired the babysitter, and Hadley was, let's see, they're 2 years apart. So one and three. And, the first day that the babysitter came, and our babysitter is fantastic. We don't hire her too much anymore just because the kids are in school, but, the girls loved her. So, you know, that's the first thing. But the first day, I drove down, and I was on 270. That's our highway getting down to the city. And I was driving down to the city, so I was probably about 5 or 10 minutes away. And fire trucks were going on the other end towards our neighborhood. And I called my husband. I was like, I know they're coming. I know they're in Margaret. They're coming to our house. Can you just call the babysitter and make sure that they're okay? And, you know, I just freaked out. It was like every half an hour I would call him to call the babysitter. And, you know, God bless her. She was very professional about it. She probably had dealt with moms who were kind of feeling nervous or guilty or whatever it is that we feel when we leave the kids. But, you know, once you trust them and I just felt so much better after having been away. I mean, sometimes motherhood is like looking at a crossword puzzle, and you just have to sort of step away for a second, and then you can go back and get the answers. But it was nice for me to just have something that I could sort of either sometimes vent or just sometimes talk about. I mean, sometimes the stuff I wrote about was stuff in elementary school or high school or college, and it really had nothing to do with motherhood at all. But it was just nice to be able to, you know, say hi to myself again. So yeah, I couldn't have done it without a babysitter. I know that there are a lot of women who can do it, and you know, once the kids go to bed, then that's when they write. But it just didn't work out for me. So I wanted to spend time with my husband, and there's something about being at home. It's very hard for me to write if other people are in the house. I can't do it, or I won't do it. I don't know.
Say I can identify with that one. I do not have children, but whenever like my husband Scott is home, I always feel like I should be spending time with him rather than like locked in my office doing like productive things. I feel like I should not be productive and be, you know, part of the family kind of thing.
Sure.
So I always like when he like figures out something else to do with his Saturday and I get a day at home.
Right.
Selfishly,
right.
Very selfishly, right. But
exactly. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard.
So I guess, did you ever, in these little writing sessions that you had, these, you know, 3-hour chunks twice a week, did you have concrete writing goals for yourself?
That's a hard question for me to answer about the goals. So there has always been, I was trying to blog 3 times a week, and that worked out for a little while. And then the last probably 4 years, I've been pretty consistent about doing twice a week. But this year I decided I'm just going to do it once a week. If I do more, great. But so for blogging, I try to make a calendar at the top of every month, and I write down little ideas of what I want to do. Whether or not I follow them is another story. But that's pretty much what I do. And then when I was taking a course, those were great to have goals. So I knew that at the end of 3 weeks, I had to turn in a certain amount of pages. I never really considered submitting anywhere when I was going to school, or when I was, even when I was kind of learning how to write. now is a little bit different, but I have to say that all of the things, I guess I would say that my goal is to write. When I sit down, my goal is to write. I always have a project that I'm working on, and if I don't, then I'll find one. But I keep lists and lists of writing territories. So if I run out of ideas, I just go back up to this list and say, oh yeah, I wanted to write about that. Oh yeah, that's right, I wanted to write about that. So I always have a list of things that I hope to write about. So tomorrow morning when I sit down, I will, the piece that I'm working on, is all ready to go. I'll just open it up and I'll just start. One of the things that I tell myself over and over again, like with Coffee and Crumbs, actually every single gig that I have is because I was writing. So Coffee and Crumbs, the reason I got that story, that writing monthly gig, is because I was writing on the blog, and when I saw the call for submissions, she was asking for two pieces, and they could have been already published on your blog. And so I knew I had one. I knew I had two for her, and I sent them off right away, and they got accepted. So I know that if I hadn't written those, I wouldn't have had the time to write something fresh. But now, now she always wants fresh content, so I always write something for her every month. Relief Journal, same thing. They were reading other stuff from my blog and said, I think you'd be a good fit for this. So would you consider this? Same thing with Makes You Mom. Same thing with, Good Letters, the image blog, that's where I went to school. So, he knew me from that. But everything that the reason that I have any of those other publications is because it all started with the blog. And so I think my goal when I sit down is just to keep writing and just not so much worry about where it's going to go. And then, like right now this year, I'd really like to try to see if I could get into Salon or The Common, maybe the end page. I think there's an end page on New York Times called Lives, like they're 800 word essays. I'd love to get into that. So, so what I do is I just start to study that stuff. And then I start to see, okay, is there any way that my writing would, fit for that? And if it does, then I start writing something. So, but my goal is always to just keep writing. So I don't think that's very concrete, but that's what I do.
So I know you mentioned you have a lot of different projects going on. You always have a project, and if you don't have one, you think of one to come up with.
Yeah.
Do you balance then writing for your own blog with writing for, say, like Coffee and Crumbs? Does one of them always come first? Do you kind of just always have time for both no matter what?
Mm-hmm. So blogging, I always do on Sundays. And so anything that goes along with that, I try to prep for that. So if I think, sometimes I do these little interviews with other people called Where Are You Going? Where Have You Been? And so if I'm going to do that, then I'll write them questions and send them questions via email. But any kind of blogging for me goes on Sundays. And then all the other stuff, because it takes longer, I kind of don't put a lot of pressure on myself for the blogging part, because I don't think that reaches as many people as the other stuff. And I'm crafting a little bit more for Coffee and Crumbs and Relief Journal and Makes You Mom. So those essays, those come once a month, and I have specific dates for each of those when they're due. And they take me, somewhere between 7 and 11 days to write if I'm looking at them every day. So I can only do one at a time. I've never been able to write two things at once. I always say that I'm going to. Like tomorrow I'm like, yeah, I'm going to try to get, three essays done. And I never do. So I'll just do one thing at a time. And if I don't get to it, I don't get to it. I've missed deadlines with Coffee and Crumbs. I've missed deadlines with Relief Journal. I've missed all my deadlines. I mean, the first time I got, the Good Letters, which was my, that was a really huge honor for me to be on that one. The first thing that I submitted, he said, nope, there's no urgency to it. And I thought, oh, I feel horrible. But he said, try again. So I tried again. I definitely miss some deadlines, but I also make a lot of them too. So if I can't get to them, all the editors know that that's how it is too. And, we just keep going on.
Yeah, so I know you said you've missed a couple of deadlines here and there, which I think all of us creative types have done at one point or another. But do you use like a system or any sort of tools to try and keep all of those different writing projects straight?
This is where I'm a dinosaur. I love pen and paper. And every month I just have a calendar hanging on my wall and I write down, you know, relief is in red, coffee and crumbs is in blue. And I just write down all those different deadlines of when each thing needs to go. And then, so I can see them and that, you know, that I kind of write in the same spot every morning and I can kind of see what I'm doing. But that's pretty much how I keep track of it. I write longhand, so everything goes in a notebook. And then once I think that I've got something, I'll type it up in, you know, a Word document and print it out. And then I keep those drafts in a file. But basically, I just use a regular old calendar and a pen.
That is great. I know so often as creatives, we're constantly trying to find like that next productivity trick that is just going to change our lives. And we forget that we can just use paper.
Yeah, the best thing for me is paper and pen. I don't know. I mean, I have all my planners from probably high school, maybe even before that. I just love, and they turn into scrapbooks too. So I can go back, you know, and this is me going back, you know, falling in love with creative nonfiction. It's just a part of who I am. I love going back and saying, oh, what was I doing on, you know, January 17th or whatever day it is today, 18th, and, you know, 5 years ago. And I can figure that out. And I've written down, you know, all these little notes about stuff. So, you know, I just love to do that. I'm sure there's more efficient ways to keep track of stuff. But I guess if it's right in front of me, I'm like, well, I'm keeping track of it here because I'm writing it. So that's good enough for me, I guess.
Yeah, so I have a question about your writing voice when you're writing for so many different publications or when you're writing just to write, but you kind of have those goals off in the future, like you'd like to write for Salon and some of those other publications. So yeah. Some of those have pretty different tones and different voices that they're looking for from their writers. So how do you sort of balance that with like having your own unique voice, but still sort of putting that twist on it that a certain publication is looking for from their writers?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I would say that with Coffee and Crumbs, one of the reasons that I jumped at submitting there was because I found that their voice was, and I mean, I don't know if this should be out in public or not, but I'm just going to say it and then we can edit it later, I suppose. But what I liked about Coffee and Crumbs was that they weren't afraid to, the narrators weren't afraid to be the people who didn't know the answers. And they were also willing to take a look at what they were afraid of and make something beautiful out of it. There's not, I don't know if there's one voice on the Coffee and Crumbs team or on any of the guest posts where somebody says, this is, I know the answers and this is my experience. Every time I read something, I feel like, oh yeah, they're just sharing an experience. And that they're asking us to join in on it, but sometimes a lot of mom bloggers I feel like have this more aggressive stance and this is the way it should be and this is my experience, and all of a sudden it doesn't feel like a shared experience. And so I tend to stay away from those just because they kind of make me sad and nervous. So that's why I jumped on Coffee and Crumbs. Same thing is true for Makes You Mom. Their voice extends from, you know, mothers of all different walks too. I think Coffee and Crumbs has a very, you know, it's like more infant all the way up to toddler. I think I have the oldest kids on that team, although I could be wrong. But, you know, the Makes You Mom has a very more literary and exploratory stance on it, like Coffee and Crumbs. So when I look at a publication, if it resonates with me, then I feel like my voice, there must be something in my writing voice that that I want to, that I want to submit to. So like with Image Journal, when he said there was no urgency, I looked back at what I was saying and I was like, okay, I can see what he means. And so then I went and read through several of the other essays that were on there. And I don't know if I necessarily changed how I wrote, but I do think that I sort of modeled what I was, you know, I got a little more brave with what it was that I was going to write. And so, and that's always been, and I'm going on a tangent here, but when I first started writing, all my mentors said, you've got to write conflict. I hated to write conflict. I never liked doing that. And actually I would send, I read everything to my husband, Jesse, before I send it off. And those first few things, he's like, this is a nice story, but there's no problem in here. You've got to have some kind of a problem. And I didn't want to have a problem. I didn't want to write about that. So that was always a big struggle for me. But I, you know, I think I've gotten over it after years of writing. But yeah, I never feel like I'm trying to change my voice. And when I am trying to change my voice, I get, rejected. So one of the ways I can tell that it's not good is, you know, I'll come back and they'll say, you know, certain things, and I think, yeah, that was pushed. I was trying to push that, or I was just trying to, you know, get into the popular crowd or whatever, and it didn't work out so well. So yeah, I try. I mean, my voice on my blog is pretty much the same as it is on everywhere else, but I do think that I write about different things, which is nice. Like Relief Journal, I don't always feel like I have to write about my daughters, which is nice. It gives me a wider range to write about stuff, so which I like that a lot.
So that is really good, being able to have a little bit more creative freedom in at least one of your submission areas, so that, like you said, if, you know, Hadley and Harper haven't been totally hilarious that week, you can still get material from elsewhere.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, and, you know, I know that there's a lot of people these days who are talking about, you know, should we write? How much should we write about our kids? Mm-hmm. And how much of this is their story? And how much of it is your story? I have yet to feel any guilt about that. Maybe I'm a jerk, but I feel like I'm their mother and I'm capturing something for them. And I'm very careful, I think, to make sure that as a narrator, I'm not, you know, I'm the butt of the joke. You know, I think that was Mary Carr who says that if you're going to write a story and you're in this story, you know, you have to be the person who's sometimes the enemy. You have to be the person who sometimes people don't like, admire, or who are laughing at. You have to do that right along with whoever else it is that you're writing about. And so I do try a lot to give, you know, my kids the last word, and I'm the one who's sort of, you know, fallen on the banana peel or, you know, whatever it is. And you know, they're reading now, they go back and they read the stuff and they are, you know, they're like, do you have a new blog, Mom? Can I read what you've written now? Or, you know,
oh, I was going to ask if they asked if you were writing about
them.
Oh, they
do. Yeah. All the time. They hope that I am. They're like, you know, they're in first and third grade, so that, you know, they think they're the bee's knees for everything, but they think it's hilarious. Or Hadley, one time I took pictures of a thing that Hadley wrote. It was like a comic strip or something. And she happened to see it, and she just thought it was so funny. So ever since then, she's been writing more comic strips to try to get it on the blog.
That's adorable.
You know, I don't always put everything up there, but, I don't feel obligated to always write about them. What's funny is if something sort of not traumatic, but, you know, sort of crazy happens, and my husband, Jesse, will say, are you going to write about this? And I'll say, no way. And he'll say, are you kidding? This writes itself. You have to. And it's so funny. He's right. Like half the stuff that I've written about that are my most popular posts are things that I was not going to write about. But he's like, you've got to write about this. See if you can write about that. But my Listen to Your Mother performance, when I walked into Victoria's Secret and my daughters were calling bras super buns, and I never corrected them. And so there's this whole big crazy thing that happened in Victoria's Secret where Hadley ripped one from my hands and screamed super buns at the top of her lungs in the store. And Jesse said, you've got to write about that. So I sat down after a few weeks and wrote about it. Well, that got me into the Listen to Your Mother cast, which was great. But so, yeah, so that's a lesson in, you know, when you first hear that voice that says you should never write about this, I think you should. Just, you don't have to send it out somewhere, but, you know, just see what happens, because it's usually a good story.
I'm going to say that is great. I have listened to that. You should listen to your mother clip, I guess, of you reading that. And it is just so much fun. I can imagine like being mortified and embarrassed, but laughing at the same time.
And, thank you. Yes, it was pretty awful, but also really funny too. It made a good story, right? So usually the ones that are negative or, you know, something like the embarrassing, they usually make the best stories. So
yes, they do. So, I know you write about your children a lot, like you said, and you, mm-hmm. I always find your stories to be very, I guess, honoring of them and their little personhood.
Oh, thank you.
I don't ever like read them and be like, oh, she should not be sharing this about her children.
Yeah. thank you.
Which is probably good. So there's a lot out there in the world right now about having children versus not having children and how it affects your art, you know, whatever that art may be, whether you're a writer or a painter or a photographer. And like full disclosure, I've not read this book yet, but there's one out there that I've heard recommended that's called Selfish, Shallow, and Self-Absorbed, 16 Writers on the Decision Not to Have Kids. So much of your writing is about your daughters and the lessons you learn from and through them. Can you even imagine mm-hmm. being a writer without children?
Yeah, that's a really hard question for me to answer, because, you know, I certainly can look back and say to my, you know, 24, 25, 26-year-old self, oh, yeah, you were writing. You were writing. But I do think that Hadley and Harper, just them being alive, gives me more reason to write. And I'm getting way more done than I ever had without them, because there's, you know, this is the time you do it. You know, they're in school now. So I sit down and for 2 hours, this is when I do it, because I know I can't do it when they get home. And when they were younger, I knew, you know, these were my set hours. I know that I learned how to write dialogue by studying Hadley and Harper. You know, I knew that it wasn't just about he said, she said. I knew that you know, maybe Harper would say something and then do a leap. You know, she's very much a ballerina. And so I would learn to observe that and add, you know, add that in my dialogue, whether it was writing about her or writing about somebody else. I would know that I had to observe a person in order to write more about what they said, you know, have them say more than what they said in their words. I remember a time when, you know, I think I'd come back from grad school. I went to residency, so it was a low residency program. So I would do most of my work online, and then I would go for about 10 days to residencies, and I would come back. And of course, you know, I missed them desperately, but, you know, coming back and doing like the everyday grocery shopping, laundry, all that kind of stuff was sort of like, oh, you know, I was reading Virginia Woolf 48 hours ago, and now I'm sorting socks, and this is awful. But I remember thinking, if writing's going to be a part of you, then you have to figure out a way to manage this. And so I remember once, after I'd come home, the girls and I were going grocery shopping, and I just took a piece of notebook paper, and I started recording everything that happened in the grocery store. And actually, that's the one that got me into Coffee and Crumbs, was the essay that I wrote from there that's titled Why I Forgot the Ground Beef. And it was sort of like, oh, well, nothing ever happens in my day. And that was sort of a apologetic to myself saying, yes, it does. You know, you have the opportunity to craft something that happens. And all these things are true that happens. Now you have to put it into a story. So, yeah, I guess they're proof that, you know, I can still be a mom and be a writer. I before I had kids, I remember I stopped teaching the last year that Jesse was in grad school at the University of Notre Dame, and I decided that I was going to write. And so it was like August 31st, you know, the school year started, and I didn't have a job. And I went to the Notre Dame library, and I sat there with a notebook, and I was like, "This, I can't do this. I have nothing to write about." And I had no reason to not, you know, to stay there. You know, like when I was actually writing before when I was teaching, and I, you know, it was because I had 2 hours. Either I did it or I didn't. But, you know, I had all day. I could go walk around. I could go to Target. That was awful. So I don't think I'd be a writer if I didn't have kids, because I do not have the discipline to do it all day, which is probably why I'm teaching too, because I need those little, like, increments of time. But yeah, I've not read that book. I've never, so I don't know, you know, I don't know if I should give an opinion, but it would make me really sad if somebody said, "Gosh, I would love to be a mother, but I'm a writer, so I can't do that." I would feel very sad for them. I don't think you have to give one up. You may have to sometimes put a pause on some things. I mean, you know, I had to get a babysitter. And there are times where Hadley and Harper come home and I think I'm going to write and I can't. And I just have to shove it aside for a little while and know that I can come back to it. I mean, it's my story. No one's going to write it except for me. So I don't really feel bad about that. But yeah, I guess that's, I can't imagine not being a mother, and I can't imagine not being a writer. So I'm glad I get to do both, at least try to do both.
Yeah, those are some wise words, I think, that, you know, you don't have to feel like just because you're a writer, you can't also be a good mother. Or, like, people, I think there's a lot of people out there who feel like, okay, I'm a mom, and now that's it. Mm-hmm. Like, everything else that I would do is just done.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily how it has to be.
No.
I mean, it can be if you choose it, but it doesn't have
Absolutely.
To.
Absolutely. And I mean, that was me. That was me a couple no longer than that. But before I got the babysitter, and I thought, man, I really want to write and I want to do this seriously. And I said to Jesse out loud, "No, you know, I've had my chance to do that. It's over now." And I don't know where I got that idea from. It certainly wasn't from my mom, and it wasn't from Jesse. It wasn't like, you know, we sat down and he said, "Okay, I'm going to work and you're going to stay at home and this is how it's going to be." It was never like that. I guess I just had this image of, this is how I should be. This is what a mother is. And, you know, so when writing started to creep up and I knew what I needed to do in order to make that work, I was like, "Nope, can't do that. I should have figured that out years ago, and I didn't, so it's too late." So one thing that I had to do a lot of work to get over that, but one thing that I do, or that I did, is I would say, "Yeah, you know, you kind of feel guilty now because you're not away from your kids, or you're away from your kids. Yeah, you kind of feel sad because you're away from your kids. But what else do you feel? Do you think you can still write?" And I would just try to be really calm with myself, which is not normal for me at all, and see if I could write for a few minutes. And usually I could. And coincidentally, that really helps me now with my other doubts. Like, you know, how many, I cannot figure out Twitter. I want to, I try to, but I feel bad that, you know, I don't have as many followers, or I don't really have that all figured out. Or, like, none of my posts have ever gone viral. You know, things like that. Or how many followers I have on my blog. And so I'll say, "Yeah, that really stings. Maybe you're no good. But do you want to keep writing anyway?" And so the answer is always yes. And so I can always say, yes, you have this negative emotion. But you also, can you also kind of, like, just wonder about it? Can you just be curious about it? So I really think that I take whatever negative or anything that I have with me, and I just kind of work with it. A lot of people are able to, like, I just push it all aside and I just keep writing. And I've never been able to do that. So I'm just kind of like, okay, you're sad, so you're going to be my buddy today when I write. so that's one thing that was really helpful for me once, to kind of get away from that, no, you're a mom now, you can't do this. I just kind of take it all with me and say, yeah, you're a mom, but maybe you can be a mom and also be a writer.
Yeah, so speaking of being a mom and also being a writer, now maybe this is just me, but I have always been like, when I have kids, I hope they read. Mm. I hope they love books as much as yeah. I do. And I would really love it if they grew up and wanted to write. And obviously, you know, your kids are going to be into what they're into.
Sure.
Like, you can't force their interests on them. But I really, really want to raise my kids with this encouragement, I guess, to be open to creativity in life and to never like outgrow that just because they're not going to be kids mm-hmm. forever. So I'm curious about if you do anything to encourage that creative side with your kids without getting preachy about it or without pushing your own interests onto them when they might not share them.
Yeah, that's a great question. So first I have to say that when I was a kid, I lived right next door to a library. I was not a reader. And my parents are like total literary giants. I mean, they've read everything. They're incredibly intelligent, incredibly articulate. And I don't know what it was. Well, there was a couple things. First of all, I'm incredibly arrogant and believed once I learned how to read that the stories that were in my head were not as interested as what I thought they were when I was looking at the picture books. I was like, this is boring. I'm not reading this. But the other thing was I was always in the low classes. And we did like dittos. You're probably too young to remember those, but they were like these purple Xerox copies essentially. And I would just have to like do multiple choice circle answer questions. And so I always tested in the low groups, and we never did chapter books. We never did anything fun. You know, there was no book club, nothing. And so reading just became a real big chore for me. So whenever I worry about Hadley and Harper, whether or not they love to read, I think about who I was as a kid. And I think, you know, just keep having it out there for them, and they'll come around. So far, I haven't had to worry about that because both of them love to read. They read. We have to actually tell them to stop reading at a certain time after they go to bed. They both have flashlights, and they're both reading books. Both of them like to write too, but I suppose it could be because they see me doing it. But they both have journals and that sort of thing. We do limit the screen time. And so like when they come home from school, they have to do their homework and then they have to read for a certain amount of time and then they can do their screen time. We never, you know, if we go out for dinner, I never give them any kind of electronics. We always, you know, bust out coloring books or we'll tell stories. We play these games called Add a Design or Add a Line where we, you know, pass around stories or pass around, you know, doodles and things like that. So I hope that I'm not preachy about it, but I do get, I am pretty strict about, you know, we should play with pen or paper or books first before we start, you know, getting on the computer or whatever. I know that it's a part of life, but I'm pretty crazy about that. I'm really protective of them not being on screen so much. But it's hard because once they see their friends doing it too, it's like, why can't I do that? But yeah, as for loving reading, I mean, when they were little, before they were in school, we used to do these book clubs and I would have kids over at our house and we would read a story and then do a little activity. I have little journals for them where they read a book. We read a book together and we write back and forth about it. And I just snipped question prompts that actually their teachers sent home one day. You know, my favorite character is, I wonder what, and they just write a sentence or two and then we write back and forth to each other. I call them book buddies. So they, you know, we do that. We read poetry a couple times a week and do these little T-charts where we do, I wonder and I notice, and you know, some things that they notice about the poem, some things they wonder about the poem. So I try to just do like little teeny tiny things. And they're fun. But I guess that sounds sort of high maintenance, but you also have to understand that you know, my husband does most of the cooking in our house. And so like what I give my energy to is more that, and then he does the other stuff. And so, you know, I don't want to come across as somebody who does, I do all of it. I do everything. I don't, we just sort of manage it, but that's just, you know, I feel like I love to do that. That's how I connect with them. And he runs around the block with them, or, you know, kicks the soccer ball with them. So, you know, we each have our own little strengths of what we do. But yeah, I do worry. I always worry, like, when they come home from school and they don't have a book with them, I'm like, how come you're not reading a book in school? You know, how come we're not doing book club? That I get real nervous about stuff like that. And so I try to make up for it. But I also know that if they don't like it, like what you said, your kid's going to like what she's going to like. And you just kind of have to, it's sort of like making sure you have available good foods, you know, you just got to offer it to them and hope that they make the right decision down the line. Who knows if they will, though.
No, that sounds great. I know neither of my parents modeled reading for me, and I picked up on it anyway. So there's hope, even if you are not a reader, Ashley.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
What we usually do at the end of each episode is kind of a little mini book club. And I feel like the three of us combined could probably talk about books for like 3 or 4 hours straight. So we might have to like limit ourselves here, but we definitely wanted to, because you're a writer and you're also a reader, you know, chat with you with a couple of books that have inspired you to be a better writer, or have taught you something about writer, or even that you just plain enjoyed. So what are a couple of your favorites, Callie?
I love, for creative nonfiction, I love Tell It Slant. Yeah, I love that one for several reasons. First of all, they've got great explanations on different aspects of creative nonfiction, dialogue, setting, character, lyrical essay versus a braided essay. And they also have all these different prompts. So if you say, I have nothing to write about, you can just open up to a random page and find a prompt and you'll be inspired. And then in the back half of the book, there are essays by Joan Didion, David Sedaris, all sorts of creative nonfiction masters. And I really think you can't be a good writer if you're not a good reader. And so this has everything you need to get started. It's got great questions to ask so that you can read like a writer and you can kind of like outline, annotate as you go about it. So I love that one. I love L.L. Barkat's book, Rumors of Water, which is, she's a mom of two girls, and I think the subtitle is something about creativity and motherhood or something along those lines. I read it as a writer, somebody who wanted to be a writer, but I think you could read it as a mother who wants to be a mother, or a painter who happens to be a parent as well. I mean, it's just all these thoughts on being creative in the life that you have right now. There's no prompts, but it's more like opening it up and having a really nice cup of coffee and reading it and having a good conversation. She's just a very wonderful writer. So that definitely changed the way that I went about being a mother after I read that book, because I thought, oh, I can be creative and I can also be a mother. You know, those two are actually, you have to be creative when you're a mother. So, so that one was a really good one. Let's see, what else do I like? Anything Brian Doyle writes, he's also creative nonfiction. He writes, he's written really long essays, but he's also written really short essays that will just, you feel like you've been punched in the stomach. Every word counts with this guy. And he's a great writer as well. I love Lauren Winter's writer. She's more of a religious writer. She writes on her faith. Girl Meets God is a really good one. Still is also another really great one. Let's see, what else? I just read Big Magic, and I like that one a lot too. That one's definitely I like the idea that, you know, you shouldn't be afraid about whether or not you're going to succeed or not. It's just, you know, just go ahead and try. So those are some of my favorites, I suppose.
Yeah, I really liked Big Magic also. I finished that one a couple months ago, and I know there are some people out there who thought it was a little bit too, I don't know, crazy, like a little too out there for them, mm-hmm. some of the ways that she talks about ideas, but I really liked it. Like, I thought
it was
a great way to think about it, you know? You just have to keep putting yourself out there and being open to ideas. It's not about you generating something good to say.
Right.
It's just about being willing to keep writing until something
right.
comes along.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was in her podcast. I listened to a couple of her podcasts.
Yeah,
or if it was in her
book.
But she said something about somebody who stood up in one of her talks and said, you know, I sold my house and I quit my job, or, you know, it was something really crazy. And then she said, and nothing, I failed. You know, I didn't write the book, or the book didn't sell, or whatever it was that she thought she was going to do. And it didn't happen. And I think she said something so great. It was like, that is not necessarily the right attitude. I'm sorry that this all happened to you, but creativity is basically about, you know, wrestling with this idea and you feel awful afterwards. And creativity is like, oh, that was fun. You want to try again? And it's really not, you know, you shouldn't quit your day job, but you should definitely follow that idea if you can. So yeah, I like that one.
Well, I have not read that one yet. I need to add it to the top of my list,
it's,
I suppose.
It's really good. I think it's one of those things where I would love to reread it and then come up with action items. You know, okay, so after reading the chapter on fear, I don't remember the rest of them, but after reading the chapter on X, I'm going to do these three things, because I just felt after I read every chapter, I was like, okay, I got to go do something now. I just really wanted to act after that. So it's definitely one of those books that gets you all fired up. And I, you know, I like it. It definitely loosened me up to do some more creative projects and to be a little bit more daring in my writing. So that was good.
No, that's excellent. Anything that can get you fired up to write more and to write bolder and to write braver is probably a good thing to read.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, Handling the Truth. Beth, I can't remember, Kephart, I think it is. That's also a very good one for a creative nonfiction. No prompts, but great stories and a great idea of how we ought to think about writing, especially when we're writing true. Can be tricky sometimes.
Yeah, some of my favorite books that I've been reading that are kind of along those same lines, helpful for creative nonfiction, I think. I got halfway through The Art of Memoir by Mary Carr.
Oh, what'd you think of that?
I was like, it was like not the right time for me to be reading it.
Okay.
You know how sometimes
okay.
books just don't,
yes.
like they're at the right time or they're not. So I put it down because I was like, this is good, but not right now. But what I had read so far, it was like, yeah, this is going to be good when I'm in the right headspace for it. So I need to go back
okay.
to it sometime this year. But I could tell, like, right off the bat, if you're someone who's interested in creative nonfiction, that's definitely something worth a try. And then there's also The Memoir Project, and I sadly cannot remember the name of the author. I'm totally blanking on it, but we'll put it in the show notes. That is also a really, really great book for anybody who wants to write about, you know, their own life events in creative nonfiction. And then swinging a little bit more towards the motherhood theme that we've been talking about, there's this book I read right around the time that I had Hadley called Great with Child, Letters to a Young Mother.
Yes, that one's so good.
Yes, like it's fantastic. It's by Beth Ann Fennelly, and she had a toddler at the time, and her friend was pregnant, living somewhere in another state, somewhere across the country. And so she wrote her letters just about, you know, answering her questions about pregnancy and about motherhood. And they're like, she was also a writer, and these are the most poetic letters you have ever read in your entire life. It's like, how did you just, this is just like a letter to your friend. Like, how did you do this? This is magical.
I know. I loved that one. I love that one. That one is, you know, I read those and I think, okay, that's what a blog, that's how I want a blog.
Yeah. It's like, well, there's something to aspire to.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's a great one. That's a great one. I agree.
Yeah. How about you, Abby?
Oh, goodness. I have to admit that I have not read much on writing, or especially writing creative nonfiction. That has not been ever anything that I really knew that I could write. I guess it's one of those things, like, you grow up and you graduate college and you just don't know everything that you can possibly do. So I've definitely, over the last couple of years, Callie, I'm a total fangirl, just fallen in love with the way that you write and the way you present the world. And so, like, now knowing that you are a creative nonfiction writer, I'm like, I need to look into this. So my list just got a lot longer. the only two books I think I've read on writing are Anne Lamott's Some Instructions on Writing and Life, which was really good for me. And I read it right about the same time as I read Stephen Pressfield's The War of Art. And both of them are just kicks in the pants for, like, sucking up your inability to make time for your writing or whatever. Like, you just feel really bad, like, oh, I just don't have time, or oh, I'm just not inspired. And both of those books are very much like, just sit down and do it, stop whining.
So, yes, I think that's the best advice, is do not ever wait for inspiration. Oh my gosh, you'll never be writing if you do that.
Yeah.
But you read a lot of fiction.
I do.
And I think just in general, I mean, I don't know. I remember reading, I don't know what it was, but thinking, oh, I want to try that too. You know, I think if you just read well, and if you read a lot, you're going to, and you're in, and something about a story resonates with you, then you think, oh, you may be feeling like you're copying that story, but you know, eventually your voice will come out and you'll, so I think even just reading a good story is helpful for writers.
Absolutely. And I always try to, especially like in book reviews on my blog or whatever, talk about like what worked or what didn't work. And I think that's helped me kind of like dissect, just like, oh, you know, telling it that way is less interesting than telling it this way, or, you know, this was great, but this could have been really great. So I think that has been the best education for me, is just reading stories as a reader and trying to read them as a writer, if that makes sense.
Yes, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I love your book reviews, because they sound like of somebody who's looking at this from a writer's point of view, but they're not, I don't know. They're not like real summaries. You know, I don't want to read the summary. I want to read what people think about it. And I don't know, for some reason, the way that you do it makes me think, oh yeah, I want to read this book.
Oh, well, good. And I try not to write like bad reviews. Like, nobody wants to read bad reviews about bad books. You just want to read good reviews about good books.
Right. So. Right.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
That's like the opposite of me. I feel like I write bad book reviews like every other month. I'm like, well, this one was not good. Don't waste your time. Here's what's wrong with it.
Well, I think you can write a good bad review too. Yes. I mean, those are important too, because sometimes you can tell if someone's like writing something and you think, yeah, they didn't really like it, but they have to read this, they have to write it or something. Yeah,
that's great. And it's always nice too to like be like, oh, okay, I can cross that one off my list. I know I take a lot of book recommendations from other bloggers out there, and Ashley, you're one of them. I know Kenzie from Hello Neverland is another one. Like, she's not afraid to be like, and this did not live up to my expectations, so maybe you should skip it. And I'm like, okay, saving myself time.
Yeah,
sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, sometimes it's nice to take one off the list instead of adding to the ever-growing pile.
Oh my goodness, I know. It's crazy how many books I want to read, and who knows if I'll ever get to them.
it's really sad. I think I have like a whole shelf devoted to like books I own but still haven't read yet, and then I feel really convicted when I put like another one in my shopping cart. I was like, no, you have books to read at home.
I know. It's crazy. It's worse at the library too. I just grab them. I'm like, yep, I'll totally read this.
Yeah. The next 14 days.
There's something so lovely, though. Yeah, exactly, exactly. Oh, I know. And my fines are so, I'm pretty sure the last time I logged on to my fine, it my account said delinquent. I was like, oh, that's not very nice, but I guess that's accurate. Because I need to give them back. I live right around the corner from the library, too. It's not like it's hard to get there, but I don't know. I just don't do it.
It's your one hope of ever having like rebel status, right, is being the delinquent at the library.
Exactly. I'm the delinquent at the library. That's right.
Love it. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Kelly. We've really enjoyed talking to you, and this has been such a great interview.
Oh, well, thank you. This was really fun. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you had so much great stuff to share with all of us. And I'll just mention one more time where people can find you around on the internet. Your website is kallifeyn.com, and that's spelled kallifeyn.com. And then you're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at kallifeyn. And we'll put links to all those in the show notes as well. So you should all go follow along with Callie because she's fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Have a lovely night.
Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you leave us a review on iTunes. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If there's a guest you'd love to hear from on the podcast, or if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.